The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Loyal listeners know on this show we talk a lot about the four pillars of effective drugs policy: safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization of people who use drugs, and the decolonization of drugs policy. On today's show, we're going to look at one of those pillars, safe consumption spaces. But first, new research finds that when it comes to formulating policies around legal marijuana, people trust marijuana users much more than they do big alcohol, big tobacco, or big pharma. That's according to the results of a survey conducted by nonprofit think tank Parabola Center in collaboration with the independent research institute RTI International. To find out more, I spoke with Shalene Tidal, founder and director of Parabola Center.
We did this study because we actually wanted to measure the effectiveness of some educational videos we had put together. So we collaborated with RTI, a research institute, to ask them to use surveys to see how effective the videos were. And part of that was to divide people into two groups and ask all of them some questions about what they thought about legalization, who should benefit and who shouldn't benefit, whom do they trust and not trust, and then what values do they hold. So we were so taken aback by the strong agreement that we saw in those surveys, even before any of them had watched educational videos, that we thought it would be useful to put out to the public. So our key findings were that, first, American adults do not trust tobacco, alcohol, or pharmaceutical executives to create good cannabis policy. Less than a quarter of the respondents would trust those executives. Which was interesting because we know that they're spending a lot of money on lobbying at the federal level currently. We found that more than two-thirds trust people with lived experience, and a majority trust people who actually use marijuana to come up with good cannabis policy. We also looked at who American adults believe cannabis legalization should benefit. The vast majority thought that people who use medical marijuana should benefit, 83%. And then a majority thought that locally owned businesses and small businesses should benefit from legalization. A large percentage, 73%, thought that workers in the cannabis industry should benefit from cannabis legalization. But only a minority thought that pharmaceutical, tobacco, alcohol companies should benefit, or large corporate actors. And then finally, when we asked respondents what they care about, their values and concerns when it comes to cannabis policy, social equity ranked the highest, equal with ending arrests at 68%. Social equity was defined for respondents as the idea that we should try to repair some of the harms caused by past enforcement of marijuana laws. The lowest ranked value when it comes to cannabis policy was keeping marijuana illegal. That was 27%, in line with what we've seen with Gallup polls and others showing around 70% support for legalization. But we found that other surveys and polls haven't dug into why people support legalization or who they trust. So our hope is that these findings will encourage the public and policymakers to think more critically about who will benefit from different types of cannabis policy reform, whether it's criminal justice or economic justice or just a corporate free-for-all. These all have different implications. And so we hope people will think about those nuances rather than lumping all marijuana-related reform together.
That was Shalene Tidal, founder and director of the nonprofit think tank Parabola Center. Their new survey entitled American Values and Beliefs About Marijuana Legalization is available on the web at parabolacenter.org. Now to our main story. Safe consumption sites are fixed or mobile spaces in which people who use drugs are provided with sterile drug use equipment and can use drugs under the supervision of trained staff. These services exist in several European countries and in Australia, Canada, Mexico, and these days even in the U.S. They're usually located in areas that are already the location of open drug use. The primary goal of a safe consumption site is to reduce morbidity and mortality by providing a safer drug use environment as well as training for clients. They provide a conduit to other care services as well, and they reduce public nuisances. The European Union's Drugs Agency, the European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction, has done a lot of great work studying safe consumption sites. They recently held another of their highly informative webinars entitled Drug Consumption Rooms in Europe, Current Practices and Future Scenarios. Let's hear from one of the speakers. Roberto Perez-Gallo is with the European Network of Drug Consumption Rooms.
In here, I'm showing you the most current map of drug consumption rooms in Rome. In Europe, this is a census that we did together with all the drug consumption rooms on the ENDCR. And at the moment, we are counting with 101 drug consumption rooms implemented in Europe. Luckily, this number is going to be increasing because in the summer, we are going to see drug consumption rooms opening in Ireland, also in the UK, also in Slovenia. So we see that within this increase, the number and availability is being upscaled. But also what we see is that over the recent decades, especially if we compare when the moment that DCRs are starting to be opening for almost four decades ago, drug consumption rooms has been starting to establish a whole series of changes in their operation and in the functioning that are adapting also to these changes in the profiles of the people they're working with, on the needs of these communities, on the patterns of use, on the substances, but also with different shiftings in the market, in the social conditions and the structural factors, in a way of trying to increase the protection and the safety of the people that they are working with them. Things that we are seeing, and it's important to look within the models and the DCRs that they're happening, the changes, sometimes these changes that we are seeing has been happening on the level of the service or what services has been done, especially compared. We see there has been a big expansion to other routes of administration and substances compared, as Alexis was saying, with the first DCRs that they were responding to opioids and also to injecting as the route of administration. We see an increase of drug consumption rooms offering a space for smoking. Also, we see a major presence as well of stimulants. For example, maybe Esther later on is going to be referring to a bit of methamphetamine, or even though, for example, in the Netherlands, we are starting to see GHB within drug consumption rooms. And all of this is generating different strategies and forms and ways of doing that. Also, another part that I'm going to be highlighting very briefly is also like the implementation, the integration of drug checking services within drug consumption rooms as one of the most innovative elements that is happening at the moment, not only to increase the safety and the protection of the communities they're working with, but also as another element that drug consumption rooms are having as a more prominent role in the monitoring in the research of the drug markets that are happening. Also, other elements that we see is an increased sexual and reproductive services, labor integration, and we are also seeing, for example, housing responses. Also, what we see is that the drug consumption rooms, whereas back on the day, they were targeting to a profile that had to do much more with a male, cis, injecting, heroin drug users, are responding at the moment to a diversity of target groups. In the picture, for example, I'm showing here Medicinetes, but probably our colleagues of Ragasa that presents later, they're going to give an example of how a drug consumption room can be targeting and responding to the needs of women, gender non-binary people, and trans people. Also, we are seeing that other ones are responding to mental health, and I will show you an example of a drug consumption room locating within a mental health facility. And at the same time, also, we are seeing that there is other series of factors like homelessness that actually are starting to take much more factoring into consideration. The next part that we're seeing is also like it changed very much to increase the access and the quality of the drug consumption rooms into how the services has been provided or are provided. We see an increase of multidisciplinary teams in which integrated therapy is happening by the combination of health, social professional, and also community members being in there. We also see an increase, we would like to see more, but we see an increase of peer workers, people with a lived, with a lived experience developing and evaluating and also providing the services in drug consumption rooms. And more importantly, we are seeing big changes and adaptations to the operational procedures and rules. questions, for example, with opening times, but not only that, also questions like assisting injection, which is something that back on the day in many drug consumption rooms could not take place. At the moment, it's something that is considered in many as a way of also, for example, increasing the accessibility of women to drug consumption rooms. Or we see how also drug consumption rooms are developing new pragmatic law enforcement strategies, for example, in Switzerland, in which there is areas of micro-dealing that they are tolerating within the drug consumption rooms, not only to reduce public order problems, but also to increase the safety of the users. Lastly, also what we see is that there are a lot of different changes into the settings in which these services are taking place. The example that I'm putting in here is one that is actually really beautiful. This is Woodstock. Woodstock is an elderly care home that is providing services for all the drug users. It is quite unique. Oftentimes, we are also forgetting that drug users, when services go well, also like are aging. So this is an example of something that is very innovative. Another examples includes also accommodation or more residential spaces. Probably Esther will speak about that. Also, we see that actually places in which only one drug consumption room took place are starting to increase more. This is the case from Denmark, in which at the moment they are starting to look in Copenhagen how to increase smaller numbers. Or sometimes complementing, like, well, it's going to be the case in Athens, to have a fixed room that is going to be complemented by several mobile ones. And this also has to do with the fact of taking a tiny bit of a pressure of having only one certain and expecting that this center will be the only one that is able to provide solution for all the drug problems that exist in an area. Traditionally, drug consumption rooms, all across the literature, feasibility studies, has been understood in three different type of models. Integrated, in which a whole array of services are provided next to the supervised consumption of substances. Specialized, in which is focusing normally in high traffic use places to provide barely these services, which is safety materials. And then we have mobile services coming around. However, as Alexis was also mentioning before, drug consumption rooms do not work on isolation, and the success of drug consumption rooms also passes by being integrated within other network programs of care and support that exist in the city. And even in places like specialized drug consumption rooms, we see that there is integration of how the social and medical services, and oftentimes the mobile drug consumption rooms are part of an integrated service within a larger. So this distinction between integration, we see that already exists across all of these different models and doesn't give us a very clear picture of actually what is the situation at the moment with drug consumption rooms. In the work that we are doing at the moment in correlation with the European Network of Drug Consumption Rooms, together with our members, we are starting to shift it a bit. And in our case, we are starting to be looking and focusing much more into place, into location, into the setting, because this allows us to understand not only the complexity of a variety of drug consumption room models that exist, but also offers us a bit of a lens of imagination to develop what else can be happening, departing from local level, the knowledge of the communities, the leadership of the communities, and as well, understanding that oftentimes attending to the health disparities of the communities oftentimes passes by highlighting and responding to the structural factors of vulnerability that these communities are having, and tailoring programs that are able to respond to this context and to these specific needs. So from here, as you can see, in the moment that we take a lens of place, we have an increasing, much more variety of drug consumption rooms that exist in. In here, what I'm presenting you is documented models that we have been collecting. And then we have from urban setting is not only vans and mobile DCRs, especially if we look it through the scale of the world, not just Europe. Then we see tents and overdose prevention centers, PE injection support programs, low threshold facilities in community centers. We have seen drug consumption rooms in workplaces, in community pharmacies. There is a big increase of drug consumption rooms in residential settings, emergency shelters, housing first programs, elderly care homes. Another one that I would like to highlight is the how we are starting to see supervised consumption starting to happen much more in healthcare facilities, primary care centers, OAT centers, HIV centers, mental health care, in prison and other enclosed settings, and also in other informal remote spaces. So with this, we are seeing that care and health not necessarily is exclusive to a particular setting, but we can be start to look, drug consumption rooms allows the opportunity to be looking into specific places, identify factors of protection, and understand how to respond to the structural conditions that they are creating vulnerability for people who use drugs, and they are contributing to overdoses. We see how many also, for example, in the case of integration of drug consumption rooms of services of general population, are looking much more into the well-being in a holistic way for people who use drugs. And more importantly, they are also putting forward the capacities of communities to respond on a local level, building not only on those knowledges, places, and resources, but also on the leadership of the community itself to provide this. Just in case, I left in the chat a couple of resources on the relationship cooperation with police and drug consumption rooms that many people find very helpful as a bit of a guideline and also a bit of a study. We see that it changed radically from cases like the Netherlands, in which the police was one of the main forces that was supporting the operation and creation of drug consumption rooms, to other places in which it's really opposing. But we see that in general, as a general rule that works really good, is the creation of local round tables that they are established, in which the police actually is always being part of, in which actually the DCR, the neighbors, and the police are in there, and the police can even provide evidence and backup support for the DCR, evidencing that there is no problem, so something is happening. The other part that we see is very important is the establishment of a standard operating procedures, because it is also very clear to understand what are the boundaries of the relationship between the drug consumption and room. Because there is moments in which police can be incredibly supportive of the labor of a drug consumption room, but in another times actually could be creating increasing vulnerability of the people that is coming. So establishing these two things works. And the last one is training, education, support, and the change of the paradigm, and getting with the police, having conversation within the police department. Sometimes we tend to speak of police in a very general term, but there is policemen that they are very much close to the work that is done. And already some policemen within the police is the one that can be doing the advocacy within the police. So sometimes looking into concrete people and how to establish these smaller bridges can be very, very helpful and support with education.
That was Roberto Perez Gallo with the European Network of Drug Consumption Rooms, speaking on drug consumption rooms in Europe, current practices and future scenarios. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Marilyn Poehler is with Ragaza, a low-threshold harm reduction services agency in Hamburg, Germany.
So Ragaza, the consumption room in Ragaza was established in the year 2000. And so at that time, Ragazza was already existing since 1991. So originally, it was a kind of street work project for the sex workers here in the kind of illegal red light district, doing mobile outreach work, having a kind of regulars table, stuff like that in the very beginning. And so Ragazza was growing step by step. Started with a really small flat, like, or rather a small room where everything took place. And so the offerings and the services grew. And in 2000, when the consumption room was established, there was already experience with consumption rooms in Hamburg since the middle of the 90s. So there had been several consumption rooms in Hamburg, for example, a mobile consumer place, space, integrated consumption rooms like Abrigado, drop-in, like the big and old institutions, and even exit-orientated consumption rooms that were docked to counseling centers. So there have been things being tried out. And so in Hamburg, there was, in the middle of the 90s, a strong movement in, because like, committed employees and initiatives in the field of addiction support have been fighting for progressive models. And the role models, of course, have been Switzerland, Amsterdam. And and their commitment worked. And so together with Frankfurt, the first consumption rooms in Germany were created in Hamburg. And so there was already experience and good networking and a dialogue among the colleagues at that time, because everything was located in the same city. So it was very nearby. And the model of the consumption, like, because Ragazza already existed before and it was fixed to the location, to here, to St. Georg, the main station district, and where the drug scene was and where the sex working was going on. It was clear that the consumption room has to be integrated in the an institution which was already existing. And But yeah, but also in all these years, of course, like things have been tried out. Like there have been, there was a mobile space, a mobile service in the 90s for about 15 years, but without the possibility of consumption, but just for needle exchange, medical care, counseling, and so on. And yeah, like of course, like while establishing the consumption room for drug using women at that time was quite unique. So there haven't been many references like for yeah at that time. And yeah, yes, of course, like the model of the consumption room itself didn't change that much in this year. So of course, there have been adjustments, changes to the needs of our visitors. For example, like very quickly, there were created more space for inhalative consumption, so for smoking. So yeah, or yeah, like rethinking old rules, like what makes sense for the acceptance for our visitors. For example, like cooking crack is allowed with natron. For example, like all these little steps, like there's yeah always like a development, but the mainly model itself didn't change. I would say Ragazza is very flexible in changing services for the needs of their visitors. For example, like opening hours. For example, like yeah, in the last days it was more open in the night time. So, but then it was obvious that there's more need also like in the daily open for daily opening hours. So this is quite flexible. Also like very flexible in yeah creating places to sleep or for overnighting, because also like poverty and homelessness also for our visitors is a big big problem. And yeah, always be yeah like check new medical treatments, etc., what we can offer for our visitors. Like yeah, so there is flexibility. And in all these years, also Ragazza established important projects like Ragazza Mobile, Ragazza Contact, like all these outreaching projects. But yeah, as I said, like the yeah, the main model of the consumption room didn't change that much. Yeah, and yeah, Ragazza is yeah networked, part of the nationwide consumption room meetings, and is yeah open to take part in yeah model projects like very up to date. There was this rapid fentanyl testing, the RAF project, stuff like that. So. Yeah, for that. So about the changes. And yeah, of course, like difficulties are so small, specific projects. Yeah, so they have often fear for further funding. So the finance, yeah, the security and financing is not so yeah, existing. And in addition, like the budget for the addiction support in Hamburg, it was frozen for over 10 years. So there was not like a lot of, you know, like you can yeah, create new ideas or to develop new ideas. And yeah, the challenges. So there's still a quite big open drug scene here in Hamburg. And of course, like there's yeah, headwind from the media, from residents, politicians, etc. But yeah, like Ragazza always could in all this neighborhood work and like networking, public relations work, and etc. Yeah, could always make clear that it's also like a relief for the public. So, and yeah, of course, like there have to be like developments, yeah, in the yeah, so yeah, like substitution treatments, emergency shelters who are consumer tolerant, like yeah, we need that. So there has to be a development, and also like what the big problem is now that people without access to health insurance, you know, like or people without a secure residence status, so that you cannot offer anything else than just like the basic things. So I think that would be challenges also for the future. Okay, so the local aspect for the institution Ragazza is very important because Ragazza is very close to the scene and to the target group. Yeah, it's located in the main station district. Yeah, it's a not legal red light district, estimated for about 150 years. It's yeah, took place here in the 80s. It was like the drug scene was yeah, was there, and it was quite big and still is quite big. So yeah, it was always clear that Ragazza makes sense at this place. Yeah, near up to 80% of female consumers finance through sex work. So the proportion of women in the scene is about around in Hamburg around 30% of women in the scene with a high multiple risky drug use. So poverty, marginalization, criminalization, everything was going on here because yeah, like also like doing the sex work, like they are, yeah, the women are criminalized here in a double way, and because of the sex work and the drug use. And yeah, so it was obvious that Ragazza makes sense at that place. And yeah, so yeah, and there had been plans from the authorities to create decentral consumption rooms to avoid a pull effect into the quarter, what was already quite, you know, like a big drug scene, and the public and the residents were already yeah, like nervous. And yeah, Ragazza could always defend the location here at this place because the scene is not very mobile. The women are here at this place. They come in, yeah, do what they want. They go out. So they use us during the opening hours, yeah, more times, you know. So it makes sense that we are so nearby. Before, in the year 2000, where there was the legal authorization of consumption rooms, of course, like it was. Yeah, it was like this commitment of silence, you know, like that these rooms could exist. So it was quite difficult at that time, I think. But when the legalization was coming in 2000, of course, there had been a lot of actors on the table to, yeah, to run a consumption room. And I would say it's always like a kind of waves, you know, like it's getting good and then it's getting less good. And at the moment, I would say like we have a strong, yeah, headwind at the moment since last year. And at the moment, maybe it's a bit more difficult at the moment. But of course, like there are conversations, like if the chief of the police department is changing, of course, like we get to know each other and, you know, we're talking. But yeah, I would say it goes up and down, I guess. Yeah. But we are in a kind of, yeah, in conversation.
That was Marilyn Poehler with Ragazza, a low-threshold harm reduction services agency in Hamburg, Germany, speaking on drug consumption rooms in Europe, current practices and future scenarios. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Find this edition of Century along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.